world are still dedicated to that challenge. This is John Crumshaw with a commentary for KPFK, Politics or Pedagogy. On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org. Call 818-985-5735 and press 2 to become a sustaining member. This is John Crumshaw with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report.
This is KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esti Chandler. 2 weeks ago, six members of Jewish Voice for Peace Chicago, Ash Borer, Becca Lubow, Avery Ripps, Seth Moses, Audrey Gladson, and Benjamin Teller began an indefinite hunger strike to demand an end to the genocide in Gaza and specifically an end to U.S. unconditional military aid to Israel and the blockade of food and medical aid to the approximately 2.3 million Palestinians living in Gaza. The strike was kicked off at a rally on June 16th, which included remarks from allies and political leaders, including Illinois Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, one of 18 members of Congress who introduced the Block the Bombs bill in the House of Representatives on June 5th to condition aid to Israel and restrict sending the most broadly lethal weapons Israel has been using to bomb the densely populated Gaza Strip. While the practice of hunger strikes is rooted in ancient traditions, it gained prominence in the modern era as a tool for political prisoners and activists, as a nonviolent tactic used to draw attention to injustices and exert pressure on authorities. Palestinians have launched and engaged in mass hunger strikes dating as far back as 1968, following the Israeli military occupation of the remaining Palestinian territories of the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip. Organizers of this hunger strike set out a bold agenda to hold 22 events over the first 16 days of their strike to raise public awareness and activate engagement with policymakers, including Shabbat services, Palestine teach-ins led by a wide range of supportive organizations and community leaders, vigils, and documentary film screening. I am enormously grateful to be joined today by two guests from Chicago. Ash Borer is a professor of gender studies and peace studies at Notre Dame University. Ash was raised in an Orthodox Jewish household and has family in Israel. Ash considered joining the Israeli military as a teenager, though has since become an activist for Palestinian freedom, including organizing trips to Palestine with the Center for Jewish Nonviolence. Ash currently serves on the board of directors of Jewish Voice for Peace. I'm especially grateful to welcome Ash Borer back to Middle East in Focus today on day 14 of their hunger strike.
Thanks so much for having me, Esti.
As always, I want to disclose that I also organize with Jewish Voice for Peace and was fortunate to work with and learn from Ash, serving together on the JVP Board of Directors for 5 years. As listeners might imagine, I've been extremely concerned about Ash and their fellow hunger strikers for these 2 weeks, and I'm very grateful to have Ash with us today. Also joining our conversation is Iman Abdelhadi. Iman Abdelhadi is an academic, activist, and writer who thinks and works around the intersections of gender, sexuality, religion, and politics. Iman is an assistant professor and sociologist at the University of Chicago, where she researches American Muslim communities. Iman Abdelhadi also co-authored Everything for Everyone, an oral history of the New York Commune, 2052 to 2072. I'm very, very grateful to welcome Iman Abdelhadi to Middle East in Focus.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, SJ, and what an honor to be here, especially with Ash, who is also a dear friend.
Yes, we share that. So with a lot to discuss, I'm going to dive right in. As the death toll and destruction in Gaza has mounted over these past 20 plus months, there's no doubt that public opinion has shifted at a faster pace than ever before. In spite of that, Israeli violence has not let up and may have intensified, considering during the 12 days Israel was fighting Iran alone, more than 800 Palestinians were killed in Gaza. Nor over these many months has U.S. policy of unconditional political, financial, and military support for the genocide in Gaza shifted at all. Ash, many tactics have been employed by Palestinian rights advocates over these many months, but this hunger strike is undoubtedly an escalation. How and when did your group decide to escalate your protest in this way?
Yeah, thanks for that. I mean, we've been organizing the entire length of this genocide and for many, many years before it. And we've done all of the other things. We've written our representatives, we've called, we've demanded meetings with them, we've protested in the streets, we've taken arrest and done civil disobedience. And unfortunately, and this will be a surprise to no one listening, we're living through a crisis of democratic legitimacy or illegitimacy, as as it may be. Where despite the fact that Americans overwhelmingly support the liberation of the Palestinian people, our elected officials and those who are in power have just consistently refused to respond to the will of the people and to just like the basic human necessity of preserving the life of Palestinians. It's clear to all of us as we're watching the horrifying, gut-wrenching news coming out of Palestine every day that further escalation was necessary. And in conversation with some of our most trusted and treasured Palestinian comrades, we were really talking about how sometimes like the bombing campaigns are breaking through the media, but the like horrendous daily starvation of Palestinians who have received like almost no measurable aid for months and months and months has just been like incredibly harrowing to experience. And so our Palestinian partners really came to us and said, like, we need you to make this a priority. And they proposed one of the possible things that we could do as a hunger strike. And it is obviously, it's an intense tactic. I can tell you on day 14, it's intense. But we brought it back to our chapter. And I think for many of us, both the people who are actively participating in the strike and the 70 to 80 people in our chapter who are supporting the strike behind the scenes in so many volunteer and support roles, really felt a clarion call that like, politically, religiously, morally, we cannot allow the starvation of Gaza to continue. We cannot watch this slightly slower genocide unfold in front of our eyes without doing literally everything we can. And so we started the hunger strike 2 weeks ago.
So Ash, as you said, this is day 14 of your hunger strike. Fatigue and other health issues must be very real, if not pressing, for the remaining hunger strikers. How are you all doing physically, mentally, and how are your and your team of strikers' spirits this weekend?
You know, bodies are weak, but spirits are very strong. Like, I would say for all of us, our resolve through this process has only deepened. Two people so far have had to stop striking because of some medical conditions, like the medical team has advised them to stop. So we're four people who are still going. And I'll say, like, there are for sure symptoms. This is not an easy thing to do to your body. But the, like, embodied visceral feeling that I have the most is how much worse things are for people in Gaza. people who are not hunger striking, but who are being starved to death in tents, walking miles a day to try to access food or clean water, who are caring for children, some of whom are recovering from surgeries without anesthesia, many of whom have life-threatening injuries that are unable to be treated because they can't access medical care. And on top of that, walking sometimes miles and miles to false aid distribution centers at which they are gunned down for trying to seek even a pittance of food for themselves and their families. So whatever we are experiencing here is nothing compared to what the people of Gaza are experiencing.
Iman, as Ash alluded to, what might not be apparent or top of mind to everyone is that an effort like this literally takes a village. The team of hunger strikers are being supported by a very large team of activists aiding their strike, monitoring their health and well-being, and helping organize the 22 events held and planned over these first 16 days of the strike, which have, as I said, included Shabbat services and teach-ins and vigils and documentary screening. As one of their supporters, can you talk about the collective effort supporting this remarkable action that they're taking?
Here in Chicago, we have an incredible wing of the Palestine Solidarity Movement. We have one of the largest populations of Palestinians outside of Palestine or the Middle East here in the Chicagoland area. And I think that what this action is doing is re-energizing a lot of folks who are just frankly really tired after so many months of genocide and so many months of protests and direct action and calling and really doing anything we could possibly think of to stop this from going on. So I think a lot of folks feel very inspired by the action and just eager to help in whatever way. When we held a day of popular education teach-ins on the second day of the strike, and we had such a short turnaround, and yet folks really showed out and were excited to be a part of this. So, you know, an action like this, like Ash said, highlights the starvation happening in Gaza and hopefully gets, you know, media attention back to what's happening in Gaza. But it also helps pull in activists on the ground, right? So giving people something to do, giving people a daily event that they can attend and use to connect with other activists only helps build our movement and make it stronger. So there's really so much that goes into this, and it's an incredible gift that Ash and the other strikers are giving to the community and to the movement broadly.
You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK. I'm Esti Chandler. Very grateful to be joined today by two guests. Ash Bohr is a professor of gender studies and peace studies at Notre Dame University and is one of the six members of Jewish Voice for Peace in Chicago who began an indefinite hunger strike to demand an end to the genocide in Gaza 2 weeks ago, and one of four remaining on strike. And we're also joined by academic, activist, and writer Iman Abdelhadi, part of the community of people supporting this brave team of hunger strikers. Ash, the JVP Chicago group began your indefinite hunger strike 14 days ago, demanding an end to the genocide in Gaza and specifically an end to U.S. unconditional military aid to Israel and the blockade of food and medical aid, as you've said. One of your asks has been that your senators, Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin, schedule meetings with you. So I wonder, have you gotten any response from Senators Durbin or Duckworth? And if granted the meetings, will you be asking them to introduce a Senate companion bill to block the bombs, to the Block the Bombs bill, which is H.R. 3565, that Delia Ramirez introduced in the House? And do you have other asks of your elected congressional representatives?
Yeah, so far our two senators have refused to meet with us, their constituents, despite repeated asks. Senator Duckworth sent a staffer to have a brief meeting with us, at which they promised absolutely nothing. And the ask is still for the elected representatives to actually meet with their constituents, which from where I'm sitting is not a particularly radical demand. It seems to be just a basic part of their job description. In that meeting, like, we are asking for them to do everything in their power. And that means potentially legislation. It means back channeling. Like, people who follow politics know that people who are in positions of power have many avenues of leverage, both formal and informal, that they could be using. Senator Duckworth sits on the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Senate. And so these are, and Dick Durbin is one of the ranking members, Democratic members of the Senate. And so these are two people who have a lot of power and a lot of muscle at their disposal that they could be using to stop the starvation of 2.3 million people in Gaza. They could be using it to stop the arms transfer of U.S. Weapons to that are enforcing this functional blockade and that are dropping bombs still. Like, I mean, we're talking about starvation, but it is not as if airstrikes have stopped, right? And it is our government that is responsible for that. And so our ask is really for them to be doing not just one thing, but everything that they can do in their power, because this is a real all hands on deck moment. Like, people say all the time, like, oh, what would you have done during the Holocaust? And you would know, because that's what you're doing in this moment. And that is what Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth are doing. And we are still hoping that they will agree to meet with us and that they will agree to do everything in their power to stop an unfolding genocide.
Yeah, it's crazy that they haven't met with you. Iman, can you tell us a bit more about some of the history of the tactic of hunger strike in the Palestinian liberation movement?
You know, one of the things that people often say about Palestinians is, oh, why don't they try nonviolent resistance? You know, if only they were peaceful, if only they, you know, would march, if only they would protest, if only they would hunger strike. And the reality is Palestinians have done everything in our power to fight for our land. We have done so for 80 years. And in fact, even before the establishment of the Zionist entity, the state of Israel on our land, Palestinians were negotiating peacefully and employing all kinds of tactics like strikes in order to ensure that this didn't happen, that a Jewish supremacist state did not, you know, take up half of their land. So hunger strikes are one of the many ways that Palestinians have employed techniques of resistance. Palestinians are massively, massively imprisoned in Israeli jails. Over 95% are never charged with a crime and are placed in sort of indefinite detention with no trial and no sort of recourse. This happens in the tens of thousands. And so there have been some massive hunger strikes, particularly among Palestinian political prisoners. And we would say that all Palestinian prisoners are political prisoners in Israeli jails. So hunger strikes have been a very important part of this movement, an important part of the struggle, and have had various, you know, levels of success. But part of the message of a hunger strike is to point out the moral failure of the state of Israel, and by extension, the moral failure of the American state as well, right? That this is a state that claims human rights, claims to be part of a sort of Western tradition of liberalism and human rights, and is in fact one of the greatest violators of human rights in its treatment of Palestinians, and it has been so for almost 80 years now.
As we continue to arm the Israeli military to the tune of approximately 70% of all the weapons that they are using to kill people and starve people in Gaza, we are waking up daily and seeing reports that the Israeli military, as Ash discussed, has killed 10, 20, 40, 50 Palestinians desperately trying to reach these newly erected, I say in air quotes, food distribution centers in Gaza, because they're set up by the Israeli military employing U.S. paramilitary corporation employees that are so suspect in their aims that the United Nations and every accredited humanitarian aid organization has refused to work with them. Ash, as your group has refused to go on living your lives as normal while the Israeli military, with the backing, if not full-on partnership, of the United States government, continues to bomb and starve the people in Gaza, what are some ways that concerned citizens across the country, not just the people supporting you on the ground in Chicago, can lift up and support your efforts to end U.S. complicity in the starvation and genocide of Palestinians in Gaza and beyond? And also, what's the best way for people to follow the progress of your courageous campaign?
Yeah, thanks. We've been really heartened and even shocked a bit by the outpouring of support from all over the country and all over the world, including people in Gaza, who have messaged us with, well wishes of support and solidarity. It really does mean a lot. We love getting those messages. But there are a lot of concrete things that people can be doing in this moment. The first is to call your congressional representatives and really push them to get on the Block the Bombs bill that's currently in the House. It's not a total arms embargo, but it is a first step toward, closing the blank check that Israel gets to write out of American taxpayer dollars. Like, if you believe that your tax dollars should go to funding schools and transit and healthcare here rather than demolishing an entire people, you should call your congressional representatives about that. And you should be calling your senators as well, demanding that they do everything in their power to stop this. But I'll say, like, in the broadest sense, the way, you know, I'm a scholar of peace studies, right? And so, like, I have watched and learned and teach all the time about how people have toppled extremely oppressive governments doing extremely unpopular things the world over. And the way that that happens is with vibrant movements. And, like, this is a real all hands on deck moment. So that means, like, whatever makes the most sense for you in your position in your community, go out and do that too. Organize your school, organize your workplace, organize your synagogue, your church, your mosque, like, and organize that in a way that is moving toward the liberation of the Palestinian people and the divestment of American tax dollars from Israeli oppression. If that means running a boycott or a divestment campaign, do that. If that means, like, sending money to actual aid organizations, not the Gaza Humanitarian Fund, but real aid organizations in Palestine, do that. We really need to be doing literally everything we can in this moment. If folks are interested specifically in following the progress of the strike, we are at JVP Chicago on basically all your favorite social media, Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok, even the one run by a Nazi. So that's where you can find us.
So you've heard it. Call your congressional representatives to co-sponsor Block the Bombs. I can say that shamefully, not a single Greater Los Angeles representative is currently on that bill, nor have our California senators made comments or shown any support for ending U.S. Complicity. And vibrant movements, divestment campaigns, whether it is your church, synagogue, the company you work for, your university, many, many institutions are invested in companies that are literally supporting the occupation, the genocide, the ongoing violence towards Palestinians, and we all need to do more to bring an end to that. We have just a few minutes left. Aman, what else do people need to know about how best we can support the Palestinian liberation movement?
I think that this is a time in U.S. history where if you are not part of a political project, if you are not part of a political institution, now is the time to join. And it's not just for Palestine. It's for everything that we care about, because our fights are actually interrelated. It is the same people, the same companies that are also committing atrocities in the Sudan. It is the same people that are trying to take away our healthcare, that are targeting trans youth, that are targeting migrants, that are, you know, letting people die in ICE detention camps. So, you know, this is the time to commit to a political project, to commit to leading a political life, because none of this is going away. And so I think that, you know, people need to reorient their lives around struggle, around the idea that we are going to have to struggle for a very long time before we are able to liberate either Palestinians or ourselves here in the U.S., in especially in this fascist moment. So I think I totally echo what Ash said about finding the position in your community that you can play best, thinking about what structural levers that you can pull. but also thinking, reorienting your whole sort of existence around the idea that we are in a fight. We are in a fight in this country. And that fight is not going away anytime soon. There is no normal to go back to. So find a way to make it sustainable and commit to the struggle.
And we are certainly feeling that here in Los Angeles, where there are thousands of Marines deployed. Our National Guard has been taken over by the federal government. And ICE agents are crawling around our neighborhoods, our schools, our hospitals, our houses of worship, literally kidnapping people off the street. They are hiding their faces. They are hiding their identities. We don't even know if these people are actual ICE agents or if they are also paramilitary people who have been employed to wreak havoc in our communities. Ash, we cannot thank you enough for being here and so eloquently describing what you and your comrades are bravely doing in Chicago. We will continue to tell your story and amplify it and support your efforts. It's truly unimaginable, and please give our best to all of your comrades there and Amon, to the team that you are helping, you are working with to support their effort.
I will. Thanks for having me, Esty.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you both so much. In a follow-up to our conversation 2 weeks ago, and as reported at The Guardian on Friday, the family of Ala Abdel Al-Fattah have expressed cautious optimism that progress is being made to secure the British-Egyptian dissident's release from jail in Cairo after UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer managed to secure a long-delayed phone call with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, in which the two leaders discussed improving UK Egypt trade relations. The call coincided with a decision by Ala Abdel Al-Fattah's mother, activist Leila Souaif, to ease her hunger strike in the hope diplomacy may work. Leila is currently on glucose drip in St. Thomas Hospital in London. The 69-year-old's decision came after discussions with her doctors and family. She's been on hunger strike for over 270 days to secure improvement in Ala's jail conditions and his release from prison. It is believed that Ala Abdel Fattah's hunger strike, his own hunger strike in prison, continues today. Once again, I want to thank our guests, Ash Borer, JVP Chicago activist, now on day 14 of an indefinite hunger strike to demand an aid to the genocide in Gaza, and academic, activist, and writer Iman Abdelhadi, one of the many community members supporting the brave Chicago hunger strikers. I also want to thank Asif Flamenco for his production support today. Our theme song is The Overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for your continued support of KPFK and for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.
Coming up this week on